Tricycles, I love the synagogues, I love the Lego, and I love the Lincoln Logs. I love the fishing lures, I love the plumber's snakes, I love the things that people make.
Good morning. Welcome to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph and elsewhere on the National Campus Radio Program Exchange and Radio for All. Also launched off my blog, thesethingsthatpeoplemake.blogspot.com. Good morning. I'm your host. My name is Sarah, and I have an interview with two themes today. It's with the fantastic Sarah Evans, and she is one of the founders of the Anchor Archive Zine Library, which is a part of a larger project in a small red house in Halifax called the Robert Street Social Center. And I just want to read to you about the center off their website so you can get a sense of it. It's on their website, www.robertstreet.org. And it says, the Robert Street Social Center provides a space for people to come together in Halifax. The social center is made up of the Anchor Archive Zine Library, the Inkstorm Screen Printing Collective Studio, the Crow's Nest Space for events, workshops, and meetings, an artist and zine making residency program, the People's Photocopier, a kitchen, a yard with a fire pit and garden. There is always a lot going on, and there's also a mission that I'm just going to read to you, which is like a mandate. The Robert Street Social Center is a collection of projects dedicated to providing free or affordable access to independent and alternative media, art, and education. It is a space for people to come together to share skills, knowledge, and resources. We support critical, creative projects and inspire social change through do-it-yourself, non-hierarchical, and consensus-based approaches. We aim to be active in our communities by collaborating with other groups and projects. We strive to be inclusive, aware of barriers and discrimination, and welcoming to all ages. And I want to just tell you that the Robert Street Social Center started when Sarah Evans and Sonia Edworthy turned their living room into a zine library by putting all the zines that they owned into boxes and putting them in the living room. That's how it started. And now there's all these things going on with it. And the residency program in particular, I've been noticing a lot of zines coming out of that residency program recently. It's a huge contribution to zine culture everywhere, because people go for a couple weeks in the summer and they live in this little shed and they focus on making zines. So Sarah Evans also has worked on this project for 6 years called the Pet Calendar Project, where she features pets of friends that she knows in a calendar, in a calendar she puts together. And so the first thing we talk about, because you know that I love dressing up my pet and I love cute animals, more and more, it seems. So we talk about her phenomenon of the pet calendar. And then later on in the show, we're going to talk about zine challenges, because These Things That People Make, along with Earful of Queer, is hosting Zine Dream Fever Queen tomorrow at the Guelph Resource Center for Gender Empowerment and Diversity. And it's 13-hour zine challenge. So we're challenging people, anyone, to come make a zine in 13 hours. So we'll talk more about the phenomenon of the 24-hour zine challenge and an encouragement for people to come out tomorrow night. So without further ado, we'll start with Sarah Evans talking about her project, The Pet Calendar. I want to hear about the history of the pet calendar.
The history of the pet calendar.
Tell me everything.
I don't know if I remember everything. I haven't really thought about it in a while. But this year was number 6. So what does that mean? It started in 2005. And I don't remember exactly where the idea for a pet calendar came from. I mean, I guess it's one of those ideas that's kind of everywhere in society, the like love of pets and their animal friends, and the kind of like weird worship of them. But I guess it was because a lot of people I knew had really nice pets at the time, and I wanted to immortalize them. So, yeah, told people I was going to make a pet calendar. And the first year, I think it was in the fall that I actually started to make it, and I told people that I wanted pictures, but nobody gave me any because people are a little bit lazy like that. And so I actually went around and took photos of everybody's pet. And in some cases, I, like, went into their houses when they weren't there.
Really?
Because I either, like, had keys or knew how to get in and then tried to photograph their pets, which is really hard to do.
Yeah.
When you're, like, got a cat and you're going, like, hey, 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 and trying to take the picture at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of fun, though.
And so did people end up seeing their pet in a calendar? Were some people, like, they didn't know, or did they know by that point?
I think they knew by that point. I think I tipped them off, but I don't think anybody had seen the photos necessarily.
Can you imagine if you put out a secret pet calendar?
Yeah, totally. I was in your house playing with your dog.
Maybe next time, maybe you could be like, catch somebody else's pet on camera.
Yeah, totally.
So the first issue, did it have a theme beyond pet calendar?
No, it was just pet calendar, yeah. And then I should have pulled out them all, but the second one, I think, was pets and clothes.
Yep.
Who can resist pets and clothes? And that one was pretty funny. And it involved, I think after the first one, people got pretty excited about the idea, and so it was easier to get submissions for it. And some involved, like, cut-out clothes on animals. There's the cruelty of actually dressing up animals.
I don't think it's cruel, but I know that other people do.
I know, I don't either. It's cruel because it's so funny.
Yeah, you're making fun of your pet. I guess it's a bit cruel. And then what was after the pets and clothes? I remember that one.
I think dead pets.
Yeah.
Was the one after that. And people kept being like, dead pets, oh, thinking that I was going to take pictures of dead animals for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it was just like our dearly departed animals, animal friends.
I feel like that one was particularly special because it was sweet.
Yeah, I can remember just the one I remember out of that was Al's childhood dog, Coco. He like drew wings on a photo of her out of whiteout. They were so beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of a memorialization of, like, these special, weird animals.
Yeah.
And then, I guess, a year after that, I made... Actually, last year, the year before last, 2010, was a funny one, because I kind of freaked out and decided I was too busy in, like, November and December, and I didn't want to make a pet calendar.
Yep.
And then I had a New Year's Day party, and everybody was like, where's the pet calendar? And I got really sad, and I was like, why didn't I make one? I'm stupid. And so I made one for February.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was Action Pets. And so, yeah, various interpretations of that. Oh, and then the one before that was drawings and, like, pictures of pets.
Right.
That one was really cool.
Yeah.
That one, yeah. And I remember I tabled with that at a craft fair in Halifax and sold, like, 80 copies of it.
Wow.
I had to go back to Staples like that night and make more.
And they're color images. They're small color images.
Yeah, usually. Depends on whether I have a free way to photocopy in color or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I was talking to someone about this yesterday. She was complaining. I did an interview with Amy Lee, who has the 1202 distro,
totally.
And we were just talking about, like, zine culture and how it's changed in the last 7 years. She's had her distro for 7 years, and she was like, people sell their zines for $6 now. And I was like, yeah, that's expensive, but also you can't get free photocopying as easy as you used to be able
true.
To.
Yeah, true. And that changes it a lot.
Yeah.
I know, on my to-do list is, like, call all the big print shops in town and find out who has the cheapest color copies.
Yeah.
Because there's a few zines I started making when they were free, and I'm like, oh, God, how do I do that now that they're $1.50?
Yeah.
I can't.
You have to make very small zines and cut the paper.
Yeah, I guess so. Or make them black and white, but then it's just kind of sad when they've been in color because they look so much different.
Yeah, it's true. And screen printing is very labor-intensive. Screen printing is, like, a big cover, but
faster than you. The best thing for me to do is run faster than you. If I
Listening to These Things That People Make. My name is Sarah Mengel, and I am airing an interview today with Sarah Evans about pet calendars and 24-hour zine challenges. We're going to go back to that interview now.
Do you have, like, you know, in the wings, other pet calendar ideas?
I don't know, no. I think that's the hardest thing sometimes is that I don't really think about it until suddenly, like, mid-November, yeah. And then I'm like, oh no, the pet calendar. And I kind of, like, freak out and send out an email and ask a bunch of people. And usually it's, like, a little bit of a pain to drum up enough content, but it's doable.
Yeah. I think it's neat. I like calendars a lot because you spend 30 or 31 days with an image, you know, and then there's another one. And it's just a neat, it's a nice combo, like, the domesticity of the calendar and the domesticity of the pet.
Mm-hmm,
and also, like, I see all these people's pets. Like, I like seeing other people's pets. And I feel so attached to my dog that it's just, it's nice to see other people really love their pets.
Mm-hmm, I know, yeah. I think my dog Abby's been in every single one except the dead pets one, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's funny just to see, like, yeah, the different weird representations of her over the years.
There she's, I remember one, I don't know which one it was, she's on her back.
Yeah. And it was in Action Pets, and it kind of looks like she's flying through the air leaping, but really it's upside down, and she's, like, reclining hard on the couch, just, like, totally zoned out.
That's so funny.
Yeah, she's a funny animal. And this year it was Friends or Foe.
Right.
Which, actually, like, half the people didn't stick to, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
The themes are more suggestions than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, with calendars, somebody mentioned lately that they thought that maybe calendars were kind of, like, obsolete and people didn't need them anymore.
Really?
Because people had, I don't remember, it was somebody I was talking to in Halifax, and they were just like, yeah, everybody's got, you know, like, the computers and phones and, you know, that information is everywhere. And I said, I don't know. Like, this year I got two different other homemade calendars from people, from pen pals.
I don't think the calendar is obsolete.
No,
I really don't.
That idea is ridiculous. I told them I had like 6 calendars up in my house, and they were like, really? Weird.
Yeah, because if that person you're talking to, if they don't have a calendar and they drop their iPhone in the toilet.
Exactly.
That's there it goes.
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
Yeah, it's true.
They're going to have to go to the dollar store and buy a calendar or go to the Robert Street Center and get your calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Are you selling them there?
I actually have a bunch still left, yeah. So if anybody wants one, they could, I guess, email me or write me a letter.
Okay.
Care of Robert Street, probably.
Okay, I'll give that info at the end.
Cool.
What makes a good pet calendar? What makes it, like, what are the keys to making a good pet calendar, do you think?
I don't know. I like unusual, like, pictures or drawings, I guess. It's nice to just have, like, a cute photo of your animal, but I like the ones that are, like, either funny or, like, people's kind of drawings or representations of their animals. I find those are really fun and telling.
Yeah.
Like, there's one in this one that's of, actually, this month.
Oh, yeah.
My friend Larissa's cat, Hitch. And it's funny because I got the picture and then I went to Montreal in November and met him. And for some reason I was like, yeah, it's you. I know what you look like. I've seen a weird watercolor drawing of you.
Wow.
It was kind of nice to have that, like, familiarity.
My brother and I, well, I don't know if he did his yet, but we were going to give my mom and dad for Christmas portraits of our family cats that have died. And so
yeah,
I was like,
I've always wanted to, like, collect. I think, a photo of each of the cats I had when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah.
That I've, like, kind of specifically collected out of old family photo books.
It'd be, yeah.
Something's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I was like, Aaron, did you do one? And he was like, yours is so funny. And I was like, what do you mean? And that's all he said. And I don't think he gave them to them because I don't think he did his part. I should bug him about it.
That's funny. I know. And I mean, in a way, I don't want to get, like, overly sentimental about, like, you know, funny cats that, like, live in your house and are kind of aloof about it. And,
yeah.
You know, like, sometimes they're really great little companions, but, you know, people can obviously go kind of overboard.
Yes.
I like that pet calendar because it's, like, kind of walks that line.
Well, I think it reminds, like, there's so many animal calendars, and the pet calendar is just, like, it's homemade and it's weirder.
Yeah. It's true.
And so it's way more fun, and it's familiar because you're like, oh, yeah, I get animals, cute animals in a calendar format. Like,
yeah.
But I think the other thing is just that, like, most of the people you get pet pictures from are people who have association with your community in Halifax in one way or another. So
that's true.
Also, we all have these each other's pets on our walls.
Yeah, and everybody who submits gets 2 copies of it always. So they have one and then they can give one to somebody else.
So nice.
Yep.
Each one from another.
You are listening to These Things That People Make. The music in the background is Abigail Appel, her new album, so exciting. The track is called Sally, and the album is Great Survivor. And I am interviewing this day, Thursday, what day of the week is it? One of my favorite people, Sarah Evans, and we were talking about pet calendars, and now we're going to talk about the 24-hour zine challenge.
Da, 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 da. Okay, the 24-hour zine challenge. I'm with another radio show organizing a 13-hour zine challenge.
Whoa.
Here.
That's even more challenging.
In collaboration with the Arrow Archive that recently moved from Hamilton to Guelph.
Cool.
I've heard about a couple of people recently who make zines in Guelph, but I just don't know who they are. So just having like a party. And I realized that like the 24-hour zine challenge is a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Like it's a thing, like I Googled it and I was like, oh my God. So yeah. I just kind of wanted to collect a few stories of like specific places and their history with it. And so I'm wondering if you can share the story of the Anchor Archive and the 24-hour zine challenge.
Yeah, I think we heard about it as like a concept before we had one.
So yeah.
The first one was for the first anniversary of the Anchor Archive. And it was something that we'd heard of as like an event that happened in different towns. So we decided it would be a fun like all day thing to do.
Yeah.
I guess it's happened every year since then. So that was in 2006, the first birthday. So this will be the fifth. I always have a hard time counting back and forth.
It's okay.
But there's been a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've all been like a little bit different. It's funny because it's an event that does take so long. That it can totally be many different like things happening over the day and lots of different people going there.
And what are the parameters that you guys put on your...
Yeah, there's a lot of like official parameters I remember reading at the beginning. But we just have less rules than that. It's mostly just like a kind of free-for-all.
Yeah.
Like some zine challenges say that you're not allowed to think about the ideas for your zines before you do it.
Oh.
Or that you have to make them a specific number of pages.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And no, we don't do any of that. So it's just like, make a zine from this time to this time and hopefully photocopy it and get it finished.
Have you made many?
Yeah, I've made quite a few. I didn't make one this year, but I usually kind of use it as a reason to, like, pull together something that I've had in my head or haven't got around to doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah, how many zines have you made?
I don't know.
I was just realized as I was asking you, I was like, oh my goodness.
I know, like maybe between 30 and 40.
Yeah.
Probably closer to 40.
That's really impressive.
I know. And the thing is, I need to like, I don't even have like a box in my house that has a copy of every zine that I've made. And I need to actually do that.
Yes, you do.
It's kind of one of those things that you forget about. And then you're like, I wonder where the flyer for the first 24-hour zine challenge is. Oh, I have no idea.
And that's why I want to go to archival school.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But I don't really. Like, but I want to learn how to do it because I get on people's cases lately just putting the year on flyers because
I found
a whole bunch of flyers that are on my wall in Toronto that are from things from 2002 and 2003.
And people are like, oh, yeah, that happened, last month. No big deal.
Yeah. And
yeah, no, it's neat to know when stuff like that happened.
Yeah, and because there's, like, design trends and, when color photocopying is free or when the Inkstorm started, more people were screen printing.
That changes things a lot.
Yeah.
I know, and we have all kinds of photos of all the 24-hour zine challenges over the years, but it's really hard to, like, figure out what years they're from based on who's there and, like, what the backyard looked like and, what the upstairs looked like and what zines got made and trying to remember all those things.
Yeah, it just, the years go by and then the memory of these kinds of events like sort of stay in particular people's brains, like your brain.
Yeah.
But then, it's funny because so many new people come through so often and they also don't know that history. necessarily.
Yeah. It's true. We had a pretty good crowd of people last year. I don't know. I didn't necessarily, I wasn't around that much for it. But this year, actually, we're thinking about having like a pre-week of workshops.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Which I think is a good idea because we've like tried to cram stuff into the 24 hours in the past. But you just kind of want to be hanging out and working on stuff.
Yep.
You don't really want to like learn to bookbind in that time.
No. You don't because you're like, I have focused on this one project.
Yeah, totally. You'd rather just one thing. I think it would be cool to like build ideas like that before and then be like, okay, go.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any advice on like what makes a 24-hour zine challenge good for people? Or advice to people on how to make a zine that's good and fast?
Yeah, I guess keeping it like simple.
Yeah.
Like finding a good like idea that you've already thought a little bit about, and I don't know, like something that you can just kind of go for. Having lots of like National Geographic magazines is always good too. Stuff that people can cut out and use, and like different tools and electrocyte or stencils or typewriters or those kinds of things. That's I think my favorite part. It's just like pulling out all the supplies that
hang
out there and spreading them all out, and then seeing them at the end when they're just like a big crazy pile of cut up paper.
Yeah, I think that there's something great about eliminating. Like, providing such strict parameters sort of eliminates the possibility of hesitation. So it's just like, maybe you've always wanted to use this typewriter. Now you have to.
Yeah, it's sitting there, and maybe it's going to break, but you don't have time to fix it.
No, do it right now. Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Totally. And I like there to be, like, a zine trade, too.
Oh, yeah.
So try and, like, get everybody who makes them to make enough copies that they can give them to everybody.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and in the last few years, I've, like, put together packages of all the zines that got made and sent them to all the other zine libraries in Canada and the States. Yeah.
I want to do that. That's a great idea.
I think it's a good, like, zine library exchange idea.
Yep. How many zine libraries are in Canada?
I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe, like, six. And, I mean, there's a couple different spaces that, like, are our zine libraries, but also are other things.
Yeah.
Like the Exile Info Shop in Ottawa, like, I don't know how much. They have a new space, so I'm not sure how much the library is prominent.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, like 6 to 8, probably.
You have been listening to These Things That People Make and an interview with Sarah Evans. To get in contact with Sarah, to find out more about her pet calendars or all the great zines that she's made or all the other great zines that are located at the Anchor Archive, you can send a letter to 5684 Robert Street, Halifax, Nova Scotia, B3K1J6, or you can call 902-446-1788. That's 902-446-1788. Or send an email to info@robertstreet.org or check out robertstreet.org, the website. And don't forget to check out my blog, thesethingsthatpeoplemake.blogspot.com. Locavore is up next.